Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com. Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
You are listening to Missed Apex Podcast. We live F1. Welcome to the Missed Apex Podcast, brought to you by 12 Gauge Outrage. They rock. Today's episode is called F1 and Chill. I'm your host, Richard Spannersready, and I'm joined by Matt Trumpets. How's it going there, Matt?
Oh, you know, it's been a very calm afternoon, not like I just finished a 3,500-word article and pasted it on the presses before jumping onto the show or anything like that.
Well, it is a late night for us as well in the UK, but we're pushing ahead with an 11 p.m. recording to get it out for your Monday morning commute. Thankfully, we've been kept up and excited, Matt, by your U.S. razzmatazz.
Indeed, we do like to deliver on the showbiz part of the showbiz.
I loved it, man. It's exactly what I asked for a couple of weeks ago when I was talking to you. Treat the drivers like heroes, announce them as they come in. Let everyone in that stadium be under no doubt that it is about 20 gladiators in their race cars.
Yeah, and they did a great job getting Michael Buffer in there and making all sorts of noise and hoopla and whatchamajiggers. It was fantastic.
And given that that's exactly what I asked for, I can only conclude that Chase Carey listens to this podcast. I wonder if he's in the live chat room.
Probably.
So I know it's really late, but I do love getting these shows out for a Monday morning commute, even if they're late. And with the support of the Patreon's cash donations, it gives us a real incentive to get the show out of the door. And even if we put out a poor effort tonight, will you forgive us if I say that in addition to this, on Monday night, Joe Saywood is going to be joining me from Austin, Texas. And what if I said to you that a former Formula One boss from this decade was going to be speaking to us on Missed Apex Podcast? Do you think they'd forgive us then, Matt?
I think they probably would.
We are an independent podcast hosted on MissedApexPodcast.com. Shout out to Felix for making that look pretty. We aim to bring you a race review before your Monday morning commute. This show is safe for work. We're keeping it clean here so you can play this with kids in the background or at work. We are joined by our racing analyst, Alex Jeansy Van Jean. How's it going, Alex?
All going well now that I have my setup working in a new house with something different. But I'm psyched up and very happy and excited to talk about today's race.
Awesome. And back from the wilderness and the Rocky Mountains is Vortex Motio. Ken, how's it going, buddy?
Hey, it's going okay. Pardon my, I got a funny voice, afflicted with a cold, but otherwise ready to rock and roll.
You're very brave. Thanks for fighting through on our behalf. And coming in last minute is Rainbow Sparkle Stevens joining us. Chris from Formula One Spy.
Hey, how's it all going?
Very, very good. And we are also joined by a live stream. You nutters, it's 11 p.m. Go to bed. But given that you're here, thank you very much. Make sure you direct comments at us during the show. And if you want to join the live stream, go to YouTube, look for Missed Apex Podcast, and click subscribe. So, Matt, obviously, F1 and Chill was to do with Liberty Media changing the way we're going to watch future Formula One races. They say it's live streaming. It's probably not going to happen in the UK because Sky has this locked down, and increasingly so. But you guys are going to get some kind of Amazon Netflix type deal.
Yeah, well, it's actually a dual announcement, and it remains to be seen whether you will get to taste any of the glory along with those of us favored souls over here on this side of the pond. But they're doing some sort of deal with Netflix, but not necessarily for live content. So this could be like recuts of old seasons, could be driver stories, could be anything, we don't know. But then they also mentioned delivering their own live experience over the top around ESPN, with whom they've just done a new deal for 2018. That I don't think you're going to be able to get your hands on, because as I understand it, their current Sky deal runs through 2024. Sorry about that.
It's a shame though, because Sky obviously has that package, but we would still be able to benefit, Chris, wouldn't we, from all the additional content that Matt's talking about. And I feel like we're really going to feel like we're missing out.
It's an interesting one. I mean, streaming is where everything seems to be going, but I am not necessarily a fan of it. And yeah, definitely we are going to be missing out on it, because Sky have got, as you say, this is locked down until 2021, I believe, or something like that.
So, Alex, then, before we started the race, we were treated to what to a lot of people was a brand new driver in Brendan Hartley. But you guys, you, Bradley, the rest of the racing fraternity, you're very aware of this guy. Was it exciting for you to hear that he was coming into F1?
Yeah, I mean, I met Brendan back in 2011 when he came and did a round of BRKC. And he didn't win, which is great, because he was testing F1 at that point as well. It was great to see someone who I've raced with at a tiny rubbish kart track in Cambridge somewhere, racing in Austin, Texas in a Formula One car. It was really, really cool. So it's nice to see some young talent, or actually he's not even that young anymore, is he? But he wasn't ready, got himself ready, came back. And amazing to see someone who I know in an F1 car. It's great.
Yeah, it's amazing. BRKC, for those people who don't know, is the karting championship run by Bradley Philpott, where you get some great carters in ballasted cars on indoor tracks.
But this was back in the day when we were running outdoor tracks. So it was a 6-round series based at different tracks around the country. And it was great fun. And it's changed the way things are now. But back in the days, we had guys like him turn up and not win. I can't stress that highly enough. An F1 driver came along to one of our events and didn't win. He might have got third, but I can't remember.
Okay, Matt. So it was confusing as heck, because Hartley came into Kvyat's car, Kvyat jumped into Sainz's car, nobody knew what car they were in, everybody had penalties, and generally people who qualified poorly started above where they eventually qualified.
Yeah, well, and this was very confusing, and particularly with Toro Rosso, because technically Kvyat moved into Sainz's car, and Hartley got Kvyat's car, which we can also refer to the cursed car, because it had broken yet again and required a new engine, I believe, and some penalties. So he was always starting pretty much more or less from the back. But then more and more things broke as the weekend went on. And maybe not so surprising. Only 4 engines this year. Only 3 races left. Yeah, things will go awry. Yeah, Chris.
Just to expand on the engine changes, Renault had brought an upgraded internal combustion engine for this race. They brought 3 of them. One of them went into Hartley's car, one into Hülkenberg's car, and the other into Verstappen's car. It's sort of aimed at 2018, and they say it's worth about 0.2 of a second, because it's more aimed at a reliability upgrade rather than a performance upgrade. But that's why we saw so many guys getting those engine penalties.
So I know we're rushing along a bit, but I am desperate to get to the race because there was a lot that happened. But Ken, the reason why there was all this confusion at Toro Rosso was because finally Carlos Sainz got the big call, Palmer got the boot, and Sainz got his chance in the banana-coloured car.
Yeah, and my goodness, I cannot be more excited by what we saw from Carlos Sainz this weekend. I mean, right from the get-go, he was in it. And he was using that car. He was using those tires from Friday all the way to the checkered flag. I mean, what a, I gotta say, congrats to Renault for wanting and working hard to get Sainz in that car, because he is worth it from what we saw.
So you got a good look at his qualifying. Obviously, we're not sure how hard Hülkenberg was pushing, given that he knew he had penalties, but very impressive.
Yeah, absolutely. And we won't see a Hülkenberg versus Sainz until maybe Mexico or something like that, since Hülkenberg, as you say, completely different strategy. He knew he was coming out of the back, so it was a different qualifying strategy. It wasn't a straight up, but that was the Sainz I think we were all hoping to see, is what we saw today and on Saturday.
So Hülkenberg now has a real competitor for qualifying. It's going to be very exciting. But Matt, I think I'm going to have to go to you for the rest of qualifying, because given that I had not seen my wife for the previous 8 nights, I was away having cocktails with a 22-year-old female subordinate. So as you can imagine, she was delighted. And I ended up having to spend all of the Saturday evening with her. When I eventually managed to shuffle her off to sleep and tune into the qualifying, I promptly fell asleep.
Yes, your drunken Twitter picture posting may not have been the smartest thing you ever did on that front. But glad to hear you were able to mend fences, as it were.
Nearly.
You'll never get them all the way mended, trust me. Qualifying was pretty straight up. Hartley was nowhere, since people were interested in how he would do. Kvyat did a good job. The big difference, I think, was Alonso managing a P9 and getting out of Q2. He drove a lap that was just stellar, absolutely stellar, to make it into the last qualifying session. Compared to Van Dorn, who had been looking a little bit more racy, but I found out afterwards, and you may have already known this, Stevens, that he had almost a 2018 wing on the front of his car, which gave him a fairly significant advantage.
And he was singing its praises after qualifying. He says it's probably the best step forward that McLaren have made this year. So I would certainly hope that that would be on Van Dorn's car very quickly, if it is the upgrade that we are led to believe it is.
Yeah, so Chris, though, as we got to the business end, now we've been talking all season about who has the fastest car, and quali modes aside, this was meant to be something that was going to suit Ferrari, being all pointy through Sector 1. But Mercedes had it, yes, Vettel got ahead of Bottas, but Hamilton had this on pace. He did all weekend, but let's start with quali.
Well, it's interesting. I watched that Mercedes car, all throughout practice, qualifying in the race, and at no point did the front or rear of that car look compliant, which is really interesting, because it was obviously still very, very quick. But the thing that troubles me is that Ferrari arrived in Texas with an armada of upgrades. I've been talking to Summers quite a lot about this, because I was quite keen to know more about it. But they had a new front wing, barge boards, floor, diffuser, the works. And they still could not match Mercedes on qualifying or race pace, which is slightly worrying. And Summers has enforced the idea that it's only worth a couple of tenths, these upgrades. But still, that's quite worrying for the rest of the season.
Right. Well, the response I have to that is I don't think Ferrari will be able to match Mercedes in qualifying. I think with the oil burn restriction, and with him not being able to implement their proper upgrade of the power unit they had originally planned, I think that's off the table for them. They won't have the same engine power as Mercedes, and Mercedes have that advantage in hand, although primarily with Hamilton, not so much with Bottas anymore. What I do want to say is that, upgrades or no, first of all, correlation can be tricky. So sometimes you can show up with upgrades that don't either do what you expect them to, or make your driver feel so unsettled that you might as well not bother. Either one could be the case. But in Austin in particular, we had very high wind gusts. We saw it catch out Ricciardo during qualifying, and it may just be that with that shark fin and with the particular aero that Ferrari is running, they might simply be more vulnerable to those crosswinds and headwinds when they are in yaw. And you were correct, though. Neither car looked to be particularly drivable on Friday. And even though, obviously, Lewis was able to get on top of it, he was putting in a lot more effort than usual to get that thing around the track. So I don't think it's done and dusted. Mercedes now has the best car, and that's the end of it. We shall see in Mexico.
Well, if I may jump in just real quick, I think in regards to qualifying and Mercedes, as you say, Matt, and I don't know really if the oil burning has all that much to do with it or not, but there is that extra motor, extra horsepower that Mercedes is able to apply. And you could see it in the sector times on Saturday that, you know, Mercedes just was able to blitz sector two with that really long straight. But going back to what Chris said, though, about McLaren and the upgrade that they brought just on the Alonso car, what was interesting that Alonso said about the McLaren upgrades, and you can contrast, for instance, Williams, they bring upgrades, and Massa is saying like, well, they're not really working, and that being able to verify or correspond. Alonso was saying everything that comes out of their wind tunnel that they bolt on the car at the track, it works. It works as they thought it would. And that's really impressive for the McLaren in the next season.
You know, you would hope a team like Ferrari will be able to bring up days and have them work immediately, you know, a big team like that. But I think what hurt Vettel as well, especially for qualifying, was that the fact that he lost a lot of the qualifying simulation stuff from FP2 after he made that mistake very early on in the session that completely shredded a set of tires and then needed a chassis swap overnight as well, after he said his front axle felt like jelly, which is quite an interesting quote, one of the more interesting ones that I've heard for a chassis.
Yeah, and probably a lot of us were chatting about, it's maybe more of an indication about what is going on in Sebastian Vettel's head, that he needed it to be absolutely perfect this weekend. And as we'll see as we go into talking about the race, perhaps not. Okay, guys, you know that I just like to waffle on indiscriminately, but I do have enough respect for your ears to go to Matt Trumpets and ask where the race was won and lost.
Well, in a nutshell, at the start, we really thought we were going to have a proper race with Vettel getting the jump on Hamilton. But it became very clear when Lewis retook the lead that that was simply not going to be the case. The Mercedes had the race pace over the Ferrari in these conditions on this track. And it's worth remembering, there'd been a huge thunderstorm and that the track was fairly green, and is shaking his head. So yes, you'll be able to comment in a moment, but equally important, the track temperatures were in the mid 30s, which is very much a Mercedes wheelhouse. And had they been into the 40s, we might have had a different story.
Sorry, who was shaking their head?
Ken.
Oh, go on, Ken.
Oh, well, I was just going to say, I really don't think that the big rainstorm had all that much effect on the all the teams knew that was going to happen, that was foreseen in the forecast, and I think they were compensating for that in their setups to some degree. It wasn't a surprise, and I didn't see it as a big issue.
Yeah, okay, but then Matt, but as Sebastian Vettel did get ahead, I think it was apparent very, very early on that they didn't have the pace to hold Hamilton off. And in fact, Jeansy, you were telling us about some comments Hamilton made about trailing Vettel at the start.
Yeah, so in his interview after the race, he was talking about that when he was following Seb, he found it quite easy to follow Seb. But he also noticed that he was too fast through a lot of corners, using his tires up quite a lot of sideways action, and also locking up the top of the wheels quite a lot, making quite a lot of mistakes. And he said from that point he knew he could have him, because he was burning up his tires, letting his temperatures go through the roof. So I don't think it was necessarily the Ferrari didn't have the pace, because to be fair, once it got going, Kimi had decent pace in the Ferrari, actually better pace than Seb, really. I think Lewis has had the measure of Seb today.
That's an interesting point you make about Raikkonen as well, because it's worth noting that of all the Ferrari upgrades, he wasn't necessarily running all of them. He only had, I think it was the barge boards and the front wing, if I remember rightly. He certainly didn't have the new diffuser on his car.
could all the upgrades that Ferrari had this weekend just been a reaction to the last few weeks? Bit of a panic that, oh crap, we're about to lose this championship and we need to throw everything we've got, possibly that's in the bin at Maranello, to try and make something work and make something stick. Could it have just been panic stations?
I think at this point, anything that ends up in the car is aimed at 2018.
Yeah, mostly aimed at 2018. And there could be a bit of panic in there. But the reality of what Lewis described was the fact that Ferrari's aero, for whatever reason, wasn't as efficient as it needed to be. He was overdriving to try and keep that margin. And that's why Lewis felt confident in his ability to take him. But even though that was the case, it did not necessarily mean the race itself was over. And in fact, it was far from over. But the person who really got himself into tire difficulty early on was the Red Bull of Daniel Ricciardo, trying to take out Bottas. And not once, but twice, he had a proper go and managed to just basically ruin his tires to the point where he was one of the earliest stoppers on lap 11. As it happens, fairly irrelevant because his Renault engine gave up the ghost on lap 16. But what it did do is clear the way for Verstappen, who was on an unbelievable charge from the back and was up into the top 10 within the first 10 laps.
It really was a great charge. But before we move on too far, Chris, what about that battle between Ricciardo and Bottas?
Yeah, it was fantastic. And I really enjoyed watching it. It's really great to, you know, see some proper scrapping, which I think the Austin track does allow for. I think you also need to have a honey badger who makes outlandishly late dives on the inside for turn one, which is always great as well. And, you know, there was an investigation about leaving the track, gaining an advantage. I think that was all pish, to be honest. And I think it worked out just the way that it should have.
Jeansy is going to be desperate to get into that, but we'll go into that as a comparison when we talk a little bit about the track limits that cost Verstappen later on in the race. But Matt, it was clear, though, that Ricciardo could not get past Bottas, yet had the pace to go. And he sort of was changing to a two-stop. And actually, a lot of people in the end ended up changing to a two-stop race, where on pace, you have to figure that the one-stop was probably what everyone wanted to do.
Well, I think the teams always prefer doing a one-stop. But the fact is, Pirelli offered up three strategy recommendations for the tires. The top two were both two-stoppers, ultra, super, and only Hamilton at the sharp end actually ran a one-stopper, which was their third recommendation. And this comes into play later on, but even at the first pit stop, it was obvious that Bottas was struggling much more than Hamilton.
Bottas.
Yeah, exactly what I said.
No, it isn't.
Very good imitation of me saying it. Congratulations.
Okay, agree to disagree.
You are tired.
Look, the announcer guy said, introducing Bottas. And look, he's an American like you. He speaks for all Americans. Therefore, you now have to concede forever that it is not Bottas. You are wrong.
Except for the fact that for me, that is a correct pronunciation. So therefore, I am correct in my correctness.
Pronunciation, yes. Okay, so have I thrown you off completely?
No, in fact, we were discussing the first round of pit stops. And what was interesting about that was that Vettel came in and Lewis stayed out. And Lewis, they ran a radio message, which aren't always synchronized in time, but he said he was perfectly happy on his tires. But as I was sat there watching, Vettel's first full lap on the soft tires they kicked him out on was nearly 2 seconds faster. And almost immediately was putting Lewis in danger of not being able to get through the pits and out ahead of him. But they still chose to bring in Bottas first, which I thought was an astonishing thing for Mercedes to do. But also clearly they were concerned about trying to preserve his podium position and were willing to let Lewis have his way for another lap.
Yeah, so Sparkles, it was very much Hamilton saying, I'm fine. But then afterwards, he certainly felt the pinch. And I think an early contender for a Pony Award was his comments on the radio saying, how on earth did it get that close?
Which I can't really understand. I mean, yeah, they want to keep it to the limit. They knew that the undercut was going to be worth a considerable amount. I think it's 1 second-ish a lap if you come in earlier than your rival. And I guess maybe I suppose they just want to cover it off and try and extend that stint as much as possible so that they are comfortable for the end of the race. And, you know, you build up that early lead because you don't know what's going to happen later in the race, like Max Verstappen prompting a second round of pit stops, for example.
And that's it. And that's what I was going to say, which is the race pretty much went to sleep at that point, and it kind of went on pause for 19 laps. And then suddenly Verstappen was like, nah, I'm having some new boots. And then everyone's like, dude, Verstappen's in. We know what Verstappen does. We need to do something.
Well, yeah, the race at the front, very much so. The race in the midfield was an entirely different sort of scenario. And I have to call out both Sebastian Ocon, who had a very brilliant drive and, in fact, managed in his start to get all the way up to P5, and not showing any favoritism here at all, am I, Vortex? Carlos Sainz, making hay in his brand new Renault.
Yeah, and you know what's great about this track, I think what happened today is that we're seeing the drivers themselves making the difference. In particular, and I want to go back to what Jeansy had mentioned, you know, in regards to Hamilton versus Vettel, and how really the race was won and lost right there in that first stint, and that Hamilton had no problem hanging back and watching Vettel, and saw that Vettel was overdriving the car, and Hamilton had all that in reserve, and then he was able to extend that stint, and he tells his team, "Hey, I'm comfortable on these tires." It was a brilliant performance, and you know, I'm not a Hamfosi. I appreciate all drivers, but let's be honest, we saw another beautiful performance of the way that he was able to get into the groove of that track, and he was able to extend the life of his tires. And you look at what he did versus his teammate, who fought and lost to even stay on the podium when Mercedes really needs two strong drivers
And so what you're saying here, Ken, is you're putting Sainz in that category. You're thinking he's going to make a real difference now. Obviously, we were robbed seeing him up against Hülkenberg, but do you anticipate for the rest of the season that we're going to see, you know, Sainz starting to make his reputation now?
Well, it's hard to say with Sainz, because recently he's been making mistakes on Sundays that he should not be making. But when he's on it, and we saw that today, he is kind of smart in the way that Ocon and Perez are smart, as well as Hamilton, obviously, and that they're thinking about the whole race from the start to the checkered flag, and he drives for the points and tries to maximize, and he can be really smart, and he did that today. And Hülkenberg is fast on Saturdays and does pretty well on Sundays, but it's always good to have two drivers to push each other hard.
I think Hülkenberg needs a bit of a kick up the backside in terms of a teammate battle, and I think Sainz is definitely going to be giving him that. He was on the pace straight away, which is fantastic to see. And also, move of the year on Sergio Perez. That was simply astonishing. He'd set that up for about 6 or 7 corners, and to have made a pass all the way through that long right-hander and through turn 19, amazing, truly astonishing.
Okay, but just like in football, if you bang one into the top corner and the keeper just stands there, it does not look as good as when the guy, the keeper is flying out to the left and he gets his fingertips to it. It looks even better. Perez made that pass look good because Perez was defending hard and he had pace.
Is this the one where Sainz went up the inside of the second to last corner? Did that one? Yeah, that was, I mean, and that was overtaking a corner you can't overtake on. That is a downhill corner on a negative camber. That is a really, really tough place to overtake. And you know when a move's good, when Martin Brundle is almost out of his seat getting all rather wound up about it. But no, I think across the field, we saw some incredible defensive and offensive driving all the way up and down the field until Ericsson got involved.
We'll get to that, don't worry.
I'm so glad we're getting into this, because for me, the Perez thing and the signs thing, and then the signs and the Ocon thing, exposed a real rift, for lack of a better word. I mean, there was Perez. Oh, Ocon needs to go faster. I have so much pace. Let me buy. I promise I'll give the spot back. Here comes signs. What happens? Pass of the day. Done.
Before that happened.
End of the race, signs. Well into DRS. Lap after lap after lap. What is the one thing he cannot do? Oh, goodbye, Ocon. I think Perez was pace. Maybe he had over Ocon. I doubt it. Seems now like he was very much bluffing. And if I was running the pit wall at Force India, I would just be ignoring every last call he put into me. I mean, I hate to say it, but that's what it looked like.
Well, Sky had Otmar Safnau on their pit wall, who kept on coming in. And he's actually really, really good on there. Yeah. I really enjoy having him on there. And he was saying when that happened, they literally got him on the rail and said, what have you told them? Said, well, we've told them to remain stationed. And all the way through Perez's, I think he ranted for about two laps. And all of a sudden, six tenths, and Ocon was gone anyway. So Ocon was doing as he was told by the pit wall, holding up to a particular pace, and then he went.
Yeah, I mean, they literally told Perez, Ocon's doing conservation. You kind of need to be doing that too right now.
Yeah, reminds me of China 2014, Chris, when everyone was whinging that Rosberg should have been let past Hamilton. But hey, you know, I let things go, so let's move on.
Oh, absolutely. But I've got to say that whole scenario was set up by Force India's early pit stops. And the fact that Sainz came in much later, it just left them totally exposed for the rest of that race.
Well, they got a bit cocky because, again, Otmar Safnau came on the radios and was like, oh, it's all right, we're not racing Williams, they're fine, we haven't got to worry about them. And all the while, it's like they didn't notice that Sainz was catching at a rapid rate of knots. Now, Sainz, I know Max Verstappen got driver of the day today, but for me, it was
I am Sainz. Shocked. Did he really get driver of the day? Wow.
No, that is astonishing. No, I think it came as quite a surprise, Sainz's pace. Really, I wasn't expecting him to be able to battle the Force Indias, especially after qualifying. So yeah, that I think it came as a surprise to us all. So I can forgive Otmar for that one.
Okay, so before we go on to the second stage of the race, let's be in no doubt whatsoever. Carlos Sainz is a fantastic driver, and he is somebody who is destined to go forward and give him the right car. He's going to be a world champion, and I'm going to make Joe Saywood admit this at some point in the future if he continues to be in the show, because I don't think Joe's that impressed with him. But for me, he matched Max Verstappen. And politics aside, it was a coin toss over who was going to be at Red Bull. And it could be Sainz in that Red Bull right now, picking up race victories this season, as far as I'm concerned. Jeansy.
It wasn't really a coin toss. It was more the fact that Max is the more exciting driver. That was the reason for it. Nothing to do with, I think they were actually quite level. I think the pace showed it. But Max is more exciting.
Yeah, and sorry, chat room, we've not gone much to you this evening. Blackout 19 says, the surprise for me was with Sainz was how quick he was all through FP1, FP2 and FP3 right out of the box. I know Andrew Benson on BBC always talks about the sign of a great driver is how quickly they pick things up in new situations and how quickly they adjust. Matt, let's go on with the race, though, a little bit, because it was at lap 39 where Max Verstappen decided to pit, stick on his fresh boots, kind of that same cascade effect that Red Bull have often caused and have kind of made everybody react to it. Obviously, Hamilton didn't respond. Bottas didn't respond. And Vettel did. Now, I will start off by saying, I think this season in particular, we have seen that the tactic of going for a shorter stint at the end with softer tyres is basically the equivalent of NFL's Hail Mary. It very rarely pulls off. It's, we've got no other option. We can't beat him on these tyres. We don't have the pace. Let's try something different. It excites people because they come out of the pit box and start setting purple sectors, but it's just not something that works.
Well, it depends on the math. It certainly worked for Hamilton in Canada more than a few years ago when he was in the lead of the race and pitted for new tyres and came back out and passed everybody. But you're right. It's a move more often employed by those who know they don't have a straight up pace on tires of similar age to get by. And it's employed by those who don't have the aero to make the tires last. Now, to me, what was immediately astonishing was that Ferrari up and up admitted they were so worried about Verstappen, they weren't going to pit Raikkonen, whom you might have expected, but they were going to pit Vettel, who was currently ahead of the Raikkonen-Bottas battle, and to give him new tires. And they did it at a pit window that saw him out with less than a second on Verstappen as they began to chase down the battling pair of Raikkonen and Bottas.
Yeah, so, and then Hamilton, he's committed to that one stop. Do you think he was in danger at any point?
Well, I don't think he was immediately committed to it, but it was a surprise to me, the pace differential, like in their first lap or two. It was well over a second a lap they were taking out of Hamilton, and his window closed very, very rapidly. And I think you could take Vettel's being pitted as an admission they were just not managing the tires as well as Mercedes in the front was. But what the other surprise was, and especially given his history, was the fact that they left Bottas out, because he is not known to be always the best at managing his tires. And this left him completely vulnerable at the end of the race. I think Mercedes may have given up a podium by not pitting him along with Vettel and Verstappen.
So, Chris, was the temptation to use Bottas as a blocker? And would it have been better if they'd have just given him fresh boots and say, go to town? Because when is he strong? When is he punchy at the start of stints?
Well, for Lewis, this goes back to what I was saying about creating the gap that you need. And that's probably why he was able to make the one stop work. But for Bottas, it's tough. I think that they maybe just decided that if we do the same as what Vettel does, will come out in second. Because you know, as soon as Vettel came in and put in that one lap time, Bottas was going to lose out to him and to Verstappen as well. So pretty much at that point, you're committed. And I know it's a track that's maybe easier to overtake on than most circuits, but you would always take track position over anything else, especially with the aero regulations of the way they are at the moment. It is tough to follow. And so I think you should always take track position.
To be fair, regardless, at the end of the day, of the top five drivers, Bottas was the slowest anyway. So it made no difference. It doesn't matter what strategy he was on. I still think he'd have got done by everybody.
Low Stealth in the chat room is saying they were hedging in case Lewis didn't have the pace he said he did. But really, in the end, when I was looking at, you know, the differential in lap times, Lewis probably had 10 laps to spare in order to hold off anyone who was coming through. But tell you who didn't have a lot of space to spare is the Ferraris. But here, for once in the season, let's give them the credit for what they did on the pit wall. It was incredible to hold on to Verstappen's second place. Because, Matt, Verstappen was coming through with the pace to take both of them. Did you catch the conversation that Vettel and Bottas were having afterwards and the little thing they did to keep Verstappen behind? They were basically saying that Sebastian Vettel slowed down enough to make sure that Kimi Raikkonen had DRS to help him hold off Max.
Yep, that's a properly good teammate, especially because, much like Bottas, Raikkonen was not given the advantage of fresh tires to defend himself with. So you think, well, that's the least you could do for your teammate. And sadly enough, it didn't really work, except for it kind of did work after all, once the race was said and done. But I think we're saving that entertainment for just a little bit in the future.
We are. Don't worry about that. But Chris, I mean, what happens if Vettel ends up somehow winning the championship by a point or two? Then that will have been crucial. People don't like team orders. I love it. I love it when two guys work as a team, when they're doing the drafting at Monza to get a better pit lap, when one car is playing a block. I don't know why that's seen as bad. I see that as the ultimate in team sport.
I think the problem people have with team orders, certainly the issue I have, is when you tell them not to race. That's the issue that I have. Here, it made perfect sense because you had two guys on very different strategies. The speed differential was enormous. You know, it made sense.
But when you tell them to race, you get two guys in pink cars that smash into each other all the time, and race and team orders have to happen. Ferrari, it's more clear cut. They favour Sebastian over Kimi, and Kimi hasn't been at the races this year. It's a necessary evil, unfortunately, because if you can't trust your drivers to race, you've got to stop them because the points are more important for the team.
James Funnell, F1 is the ultimate team sport. 1,500 people back at the Mercedes factory should not be ruined by the ego of the two guys spearheading it on track. And it's amazing. I loved the Force India team principal just being really unapologetic about it. It's like, nope, we've got our places. We're staying put. As much as I want to see get those guys battling, I hope they start again next season afresh. I hope those two guys really, really get to race. Right then. So I think we're going to go on to...
Whose fault is it?
Yay! I love apportioning blame because my wife tells me that's how we have to live our lives, apparently. It's okay. It's only forever until the sweet release of whatever comes next.
You know who else feels that way?
Tell me.
Niki Lauda.
Why is that?
Oh, he flat out said it's always somebody's fault.
I love it. Him and my wife would get on very, very well in a restaurant while I sadly sipped on whiskey. Excuse me a minute while I put this cup to my lips. Ah, happiness. Okay, so whose fault is this? Had three parts as far as I'm concerned. It wasn't really a race where people were banging a lot of wheels, but let's quickly cover the first contact of the race. Was there anything wrong with the defense jeansy that Hamilton put on Vettel? Because he squeezed him very far onto the left. Then he gave him quite a lot of room going into the braking zones. And then Vettel actually moved in the braking zone, something he got very, very upset with Max Verstappen about. How did you see that turn one encounter?
Lewis did exactly what Seb should have done in Singapore. And that's as clear as cut as it is. It was firm but fair. He gave him enough room. It was actually clear cut. I don't think it needs to be talked about. It was that simple.
So he went over quite aggressively, but when it came down to it, he realized that he needed to leave racing room. But Chris, I mean, clearly Vettel in the braking zone did move outwards to give himself a better line into the apex. Exactly what he was ranting at Max Verstappen for in Mexico.
Hey, I'm amazed that this is even on the agenda.
Well, it's not. I just threw it in.
Well, okay,
did they even touch?
Fair enough, they did touch, yeah.
It was the minutest, teeniest, weeniest, ounciest bit of contact between the wheels and one of the front end fences. There's nothing to it. Lewis realized he'd lost the corner. He went a bit wider to try and cut back on the exit. That's all there is to it.
Aww.
And set for that space.
I concur.
Aww. Well, that's not very fighty at all. Well, presumably then there'll be nothing controversial whatsoever to talk about now. So let's go to Marcus Ericsson on KMag 1. And two, I think the first one seemed quite clumsy by Magnussen for me. I would apportion that to K-Mag. But then the second one from Ericsson just seemed brainless. He just left his front end in and just took Magnussen out for no reason whatsoever.
I think the problem for that was it was always difficult because they were unsighted because they were being lapped by Seb, was it? And I think they both got unsighted. When I first saw it, I thought K-Mag could have left him a little bit more room because he pinched him a bit. But at the end of the day, I don't think Ericsson had much of an idea of where he was going, and he just launched it at the apex.
I just want to put in a word for Ericsson here.
Oh, we're losing you, Matt. You're breaking up. I can't hear you. Oh, I might have to hang up. Fine, go on.
I want to put a word for Ericsson here.
Ugh.
What an astonishing driver. I think he's the only driver in Formula One who would actually get blamed for an incident with Magnussen at this point. And it's spectacular. Thank goodness for that.
I don't care. If you're going to praise Ericsson at all, I'm officially triggered.
Retreating to your safe space, are you?
Fair enough. Okay, so I'm happy to blame Ericsson fully for both those incidents. Fantastic. What a liability.
Get in the sea,
Marcus Ericsson. Okay.
Wait, you're not talking about the first lap incident with Magnussen, are you?
Yeah.
That was Wehrlein.
Was it? Are you sure?
Okay.
I apologize.
That's what ended his race.
Oh, right. Okay. Yeah, I was completely lost on that one then. In my eagerness to blame Ericsson for stuff, I was wrong. But first.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
First.
Well, there you go. And for that one, I would apportion blame to Magnussen.
Okay, so let's go around the panel then. What do we think of Magnussen in general, Ken? Because he's not making any friends, yet somehow, the unapologetic way he continues to behave as Magnussen-ish as possible is for some reason endearing in a way that I might not find with another driver.
Well, that's a great question. And I got to be honest, I am not a big Magnussen fan, and I tend to take the viewpoint of the team principal. And if I was a team principal, and Cheensy put it quite well, actually, that K-Mag could have left a little bit more room on that apex, I thought, even though Ericsson was a little bit sloppy trying to dive in there. At the end of the day, what was the result? K-Mag was bumped out of the way. And if he left a little bit more room and been conscious of that, then he could have been fighting for a higher position. And well, let's face it, they're not going to get some points, are they? But in any case, when you have a driver that does not make it to the checkered flag and you're wondering whose fault it is, then I'm disappointed in my driver if I'm the team principal.
Okay, Chris, I'm going to go to you first for the last one. It's not really a whose fault it is, but this is a great place for it. As we know, Max Verstappen was pushing the two Ferraris at the end. He was all over Kimi. He had the pace on Kimi, but I believe at turn 19, he ended up crossing track limits with all four wheels off the track as part of his overtaking maneuver on Kimi Raikkonen to get into third place. He was subsequently handed a 5-place grid penalty, which moved him down to fourth. In my opinion, entirely fairly, and I cannot think of a reason why this would be justified, but I would be delighted to know if I was wrong.
Yeah, the 5-second time penalty, in my opinion, completely justified because he did fully leave the track, cut the track, and passed Raikkonen as a result. Now, I know that there is a lot of controversy about this because people have been running off the track all weekend. But in my opinion, there is a difference between running wide on the exit of a corner and then actually passing a competitor off the track, which is what we are dealing with here. The trouble is, one is clear cut, the other is not.
So when I put in our podcast WhatsApp group and I said what you said separately without reading what you said, I said it's completely different track limits on the outside and the inside. Bradley Philpott messaged and said, no, there's no difference. Why are you such an idiot on this? I think meaning track limits in general. But Matt, I think you felt that maybe it was harsh or maybe it was understandable in some way.
Well, to be clear, first of all, I wasn't sure it was an actual penalty because the cut that I saw showed Verstappen exiting the corner after he cut. And he was clearly, although inside Kimi, was clearly on the track, and that's where the television coverage I was watching made it look like the overtake occurred. It was only subsequently that I realized that it was the corner before where he went four off. And about that, I have two points that I wish to make. Point number one, and I think this was the most problematic. The stewards made that decision without hearing from Verstappen or Horner, and because it's a 5-second penalty, there's no appeal for it whatsoever. So whatever case they might have made was never heard by the stewards. Now, I don't know about you, but being from over here in America, usually we give people accused of a crime a chance to answer for themselves. So modestly speaking, I would argue that's a procedural issue that they should probably address.
Okay, well, let's get Ken in on this. But firstly, it is my understanding that the rule for cutting a corner and gaining an advantage, as Matt says, it's really a good point because it's during the time of the overtake. So as you're making that place, if you are off the track, you have to give that place back. Now, if he got the overtake done and then went off track limits, which is what I think Trumpets is inferring, then you have to get into a different question, which is not did he overtake off the track, but did he gain an advantage off the track? What do you make of all this, Ken?
Well, let me just say this. I think the most disturbing thing about this whole incident is that there's any question about it. And one thing that's been really interesting on Twitter is that what I've noticed is professional drivers in general, and this is very surprising because I'm with Chris. I think it was clearly he was off the track and he deserved that penalty. And I disagree with my friend Matt Trumpets because I don't think that he should have that ability to appeal that. But my general point in regards to that whole issue is that there are the drivers were saying that drivers were going off the track on corner exits all weekend long, and it was never addressed. And that concerns me because if a driver goes off on corner exit and they don't gain anything, if the race director makes clear to the teams, it's okay to be off track on the exit of turn 19 because we don't see that as having gained anything, well, then that's great. Everybody knows what the rules are and you can drive appropriately, right? But drivers are saying that that's not what happened. And they're just all wondering, well, what are the actual rules? It should never be run like that. The race director should say, okay, you cut an apex, that's bad. You go wide on this turn or that turn on the exit, that's okay.
Yeah, that's true. Jeansy, let's get you in on that because I know that you were concerned that, you know, the comparisons to other racing incidents kind of make this decision look a bit wishy-washy.
So the biggest issue is, obviously, they've been lame on track limits all weekend. Especially the exits of the S's, the first sector, and the exit to the penultimate corner. And they should be getting penalised for that. The white lines define the surface of the track and define the limits of the circuit. The reason this one is so bad is it is cutting across the inside of the track, shortening the track. Still, cutting on the exit is still bad because you're opening up the track to give yourself better traction out of the corner. But when you deliberately dive down the inside of somebody, cut across the curb to take a position, it's not.
Wait a minute. So are you saying you agree with me and not Bradley Philpott? You agree with me and Sparkles that you should treat cutting the inside of a corner differently to runoff areas on the outside?
No, not at all. No, I've been... It's annoying that they get, so I think Bottas should have got a penalty.
Okay, so hang on a minute. So what about on turn 19? Oh yeah, sorry, we'll go back to that lap one thing. You're absolutely right, Jeansy. But first of all, what if at Austria, the penultimate turn, and in turn 19 here in Austin, Texas, if they just painted the lines out wider and that was a legitimate part of the track, you would then be instantly placated?
Sorry, Spanish, can you say that again? Someone came in the room. Sorry.
Absolutely.
Apologies.
Look, we all understand that you are completely whipped, which is why you are in the back room with rubbishy internet. But hey, that's absolutely fine. But look,
it was my father-in-law actually letting the cat in the room because the cat's going mental because he's outside the room.
I am fed up with cats and ducks ruining this podcast. Okay, so turn 19 in Texas, if they just painted the line out to outside of where the cars were going and just say, no, we're fine with that being the track, you would presumably then be happy. Because the track limit is then defined, yes?
No, because then you're making the track easier. So the track needs to be defined, and the definition of the track makes it much, much easier. So, for example, turn one on the second lap when Daniel Ricciardo made his first move.
Yes.
Daniel Ricciardo made his move, and Bottas went off the track and retook the position from Danny Rick off the track. That was not on, in my opinion, and he should have got a penalty for that. And I'm pretty certain Brad will agree with me on that, and most racers will agree with me on that. It's the exact same thing with Max, but on the other side of the track.
Okay, everyone's desperate to get in. Ken, quick riposte, then to Chris.
Yeah, so let me just say, I'm with Spanners on this, and yes, definitely against Bradley Philpott, my good friend, and that the thing is, you know, you put out a big parking lot, which is, that's what COTA is a big parking lot of pavement out there, and then you draw a pretty line all over.
It's a parking lot for safety, not for racing.
Yeah, exactly. And then you say, so if, and the thing is, here's what's been consistent, though, with the FIA in enforcing those lines rules, is that if you go wide, and Chainsy, as the racer, you should know this. So this is what surprises me about you and Philpott both making this error, is if you run wide, you take a line that's too wide, the guys that are able to take that line shorter, they're running less distance, they're faster, you go wide because...
Do you know what? That's a really good point, Ken, and I would like to get Brad on just to answer that one point. But Chris, you've been desperate exactly to get in. Hang on, Chris, you've been desperate to get in. Get in there.
The thing with track limits, I hate talking about track limits. It's my biggest bugbear with F1, because it shouldn't be an issue, but it is, because this is a tilkadrome we're talking about. But it's that you should not be able to leave the track and gain an advantage in the first place. The track should be designed so that you are forced to stay within the confines of the racetrack for it to be the fastest way around. Don't make it possible to exceed track limits and get an advantage. We wouldn't be having this debate in the first place.
Yes, we should absolutely, by all means, get rid of all of the laws of physics, which I happen to be studying with my daughter right now. Look, first of all, I think I know what Jeansy was going to say, and it's true. At a certain point, opening up the corner and running wide allows you a traction advantage that overcomes the less distance you are covering. Anyone who's ever driven a car, even if not in racing, understands this. And secondly, the point that I wish to make with my original statement, which I was most rudely cut off from, get it? Cut, was that, and I don't know, I will absolutely agree he went four wheels off on the inside. But what I saw in the very last replay, and I don't know if anybody else saw this or not, this is an honest question to the rest of the panel, was that as he was approaching that corner, first of all, Raikkonen had left him room to start making a move. I think we can all agree on that. His tires were done. He was not going to get near that apex. As he started to go by, Raikkonen twitched towards him. And it looked like to me he might have been reacting to that maneuver to avoid a collision rather than purposefully cutting the corner to gain an advantage. That said, had he done that, he still needed to give the position back.
Okay, let's just go to the chat room quickly. Exalto saying, I wonder what the final positions would be if everyone with all track limit infringements were given a 5-place penalty. Low Stealth suggesting that Bottas should have stayed on track and therefore we could have extended the whose fault is this section. Blackout 19 says, white lines, 3/4 of a car width off, then rows of nails. RJ Bone, spikes with poison. Christopher Fonseca, gravel traps, grass, thick curbs, sand traps, and a huge moat. FIA, just do something. Personally, I think the solution is just a strip of low traction area. So 3 meters of grass, then a ton of runoff. That is enough of an incentive to keep you off the track, but will keep you safe once you do so. Jeansy.
I think the thing you're missing with regards to that corner, and I thought that first as well, when you first come into that corner, you've got the apex opens up. And Kimi gave him the room. The problem is that second apex that's on that long corner jinks out. So Kimi gave the room, but then the room was going away. Max had plenty of time to back out and get out of it. Instead, if you watch his input, he turns at the curb. Kimi doesn't move and stays in a constant, stays on the racing line. And Max deliberately turns to the right and drives straight over the curb.
See, I think the thing with that corner as well is that it's a natural racing line to take a wider approach to that first part of it, and they tend to sort of sweep in a bit later. And I think that's why Raikkonen looked like he was giving him the space. That's what's so inviting about it. But even if Max had attempted to make a proper move there, that was never, ever, ever going to come off unless he had done what he did. Because if he tried to have made that move legitimately, he would have slammed into Raikkonen. They both would have been out.
He wasn't alongside enough to make that move work from the start of that move. It was bold and exactly what I'd expect from Max Verstappen, but it wasn't on. And And the first time I saw it, I thought, yes, amazing. And then they cut to Lewis winning the race. And then they came back and it was like, oh, that's an amazing move. And then the second they showed the replay, I'm like, well, he's cut the corner.
And that's the and I don't want to take anything away from Max as well. He drove fantastically today.
Yes, agreed.
No mistake about it. P16 to P4, that is still amazing. And that is a top drive, and he should not at all feel ashamed of himself today.
And let me just circle back around to the other player in this whole thing, which Matt Trumpets and Jeansy just mentioned, which is Kimmy's line. When I looked at that originally, I thought, oh, geez, Kimmy left the door open. But in reality, I think in part he was trying to take away the possibility of Max trying to swing around on the outside of him and dive into the following turn that was going to end up being the left. It's a double apex right. And in a way, I've been thinking we should credit Kimmy for having given that he was out of tires, he just had a few turns to go to get to the checkered, and he succeeded. He was able to force a mistake by Max, and he ended up on the podium. So well done to Kimi.
Kimi did a great job defending on worn tires with no fuel. Brilliant job.
Absolutely. And so this has been a fantastic argument, Matt. It's making me think that we should just have like an argument cast. Well, we just come on and just argue for an hour. Let's pick topics that we know we're going to disagree about, like Monaco, Rosberg, 2015, qualifying. But, you know, things like that. Let's just have a long list over the off season where we just argue endlessly. And anyone who doesn't like listening to us argue can just dip out at that point. I absolutely love the range of opinions we have on this panel. And let's not forget that we have a regular 11-man crew on this show, as well as special guests. Joe Sayward, Bradley Philpott, Peter Wright, Matt Summerfield, as well as just us mugs who come on here and talk about the race during the race reviews. So absolutely fantastic. Over the off season, I think something like this, as well as Room 101, where we consign our least favorite things about Formula One to the histories of history, I suppose. So Matt, the last thing I wanted to talk to you about before we went onto the podium is the fact that basically Toro Rosso is getting Honda, McLaren are getting their Renaults. Neither of them can be particularly happy with what they've seen from the engines they're about to get today.
No, you'd have to say that they both will still have some questions about the validity of their choice. I think McLaren is pretty happy. And I think that may have more to do with sponsors in the long run. And of course, you know, as Summers has pointed out, supposedly they do have aero to rival that of Red Bull. So theoretically, they should be in that Red Bull universe. Of course, that also depends on the software to properly optimize the ERs, and no telling if McLaren have developed or going to be able to develop that to the same level. But I'm very curious to see how they do with the Renault engine. But if I was Toro Rosso, I think I'd be okay with where I was, because Honda, by their accounts, the culture has changed. And if you were asking who's got the biggest rate of change right now, engine wise, I think Honda is definitely making more progress than Renault is.
Absolutely. Okay, then. Thank you very much for that. What I demand from you now is that you and Ken and possibly Anil get together midweek for a Trumpets Time show where you discuss all of the news items that I so rashly rejected from the top of the show.
Okay, twist my arm.
Let's get it done. And thank you to the patrons who are funding Trumpets Time. If you want to support us, go to MissedApexPodcast.com and click the Support Us tab. Okay, let's go to the podium. All right, final stretch, boys. The UK guys are struggling. The US guys still look all bright-eyed and bushy-tailed, but the three UK faces are starting to flag a little bit. Chat room, get in there with your thing of the week, Missed Apex Ward and Ponies in the chat room, and we will share them. Matt, did you not think it was fantastic how Usain Bolt learnt every single one of those lines and then delivered them?
I thought it was amazing. I was also very impressed with his flag waving at the start. It was first rate.
Let me just present the contrarian viewpoint here, if I may jump in real quick and say that while I'm a big fan of Usain Bolt, I was not impressed with him as a podium presenter. And candidly, if I may use my trademark word,
no one knows what it means.
I would much prefer to have somebody professional, a professional broadcaster who would be able to ask intelligent questions, who would be able to go with the flow a little bit better than these celebrities that they're doing. I mean, I appreciate creativity and trying new things, but they've already tried the celebrity stuff. We already know that they're just faking it. Somebody's written out here, ask this question, ask yes. that question, right? And you can tell, and it's just mediocre. And this is supposed to be the pinnacle of motorsports. Formula One could be doing better than these celebrity guys.
No, absolutely. It's a great point. But when Justin Bieber was there at Monaco, F1 was outraged. However, lots of Snapchat and Instagram went, wait, what? Bieber did what? F1 is what? And maybe they got interested. Furthermore, I would add that Lewis Hamilton in these podium interviews has so often rescued the interviewer because he knows exactly what is going on. And yes, I'm Han Fosse and you'll say I'm just being very, very pro Lewis, but he has owned that podium in a way that nobody else has. Look what Kimi Raikkonen did when he was asked a question and he was interrupted by Lewis Hamilton pouring champagne down Usain Bolt's neck. Kimi Raikkonen simply paused. And then when that event was over, he continued his sentence from where it was going on. Hamilton adapts and adjusts to what's going on. He is definitely part of the F1 show. And if Formula One doesn't embrace these celebrities, they're never gonna increase their audience. But Ken, you're right. Perhaps they could be shuffled in at a different point than perhaps that very final podium interview.
They should be accompanied. Yeah. By somebody professional. I think it's been done before. I think it might have been when Owen Wilson came on. He was accompanied by Jenson Button, maybe.
Yes.
And he asked one or two questions. That was fine.
So I think Owen Wilson did the very first one. Yeah, he did the first one with the winner, and then the professional motorsport guy did the remaining three.
Correct. That works. But to be fair, I think it should be down to Brundle, Will Buxton,
yeah.
DC, Mark Webber. I think they're the four best at it.
And James Funnell says, you know, why no Will Buxton? But was not Will fantastic during the opening ceremony, Jeansy, where he was just running out and you have to be short, concise, get the question out, boom, done.
It seemed like that wasn't planned and it kind of got thrown in. The thing about the whole announcement thing was it looked terrible. It was really badly done, but it got me really psyched up for the race.
You think it was terrible?
I think it was so badly done.
Whoa,
it was
no
so
way.
Badly done.
Okay, you it, could but, not be more
but,
wrong.
But it got me excited for the race. It was a bit of razzle dazzle and I enjoyed it. It was done badly, but I still enjoyed it. It should have been what it should have been is all the drivers are already out there, bar Seb and Lewis. They called all their names out quickly and then did intros for Seb and Lewis. That would have been a better way of doing it. It would have flowed much, much better.
Oh,
as I'm a professional
Chris,
at these things.
Come on, you're on my side. Bringing them through with sparklers and a big fanfare was incredible. I loved it. That is now the only reason to tune in before the race. What, you want Brundle's grid walk? Really? That's your pre-race highlight?
It's definitely... I do like the grid walk. You can't lose the grid walk. I'm not saying it can't work. I'm saying it wasn't rehearsed and it wasn't very slick.
Okay.
You can't tell me that was slick.
Okay, so let's have our awkward British grid walk and then let's let the Yanks do what they do best, which is teach us how to be entertaining and over the top. Chris?
I'm not saying it shouldn't be there. I haven't once said it shouldn't be there. It just needs to be better than that.
Sparkles, you're boring. What do you make of it?
It shouldn't be there.
Boo.
No, I don't. I'm terribly British about this sort of thing. And I was just kind of sitting there going, well, they haven't done anything yet.
It's a show, Chris.
But I don't think it has a place in Formula One, really. It's just wrong.
Oh, gosh. Oh, come on. Oh, and by the way, someone in the chat room says, thing of the week, hands down, is Michael Buffer calling Kvyat Danny the Torpedo Kvyat. But I believe that Will Buxton was asked to write those intros, which is why they had a very familiar tone towards the drivers. And that makes sense to you now, doesn't it, Alex? Matt?
I would just ask Mr. Stevens, being all British and such, exactly how many people live in your country again?
Well, what does that matter? 80 million?
How many people live in our country again?
Who cares?
Way more. So yeah, if you're Liberty and looking for eyeballs, with all due respect, Mr. Restrained Proper Civility, we might need a little bit of spectacle or all of us will lose the sport we enjoy watching. Ahem.
Ken?
Oh, come on. Okay. I'm sorry. You know, Matt, you're my American brother and all that, but I think Chris's point is that, let me use this phrase again, this is supposed to be the pinnacle of motorsports. And at the end of the day, what are we all excited about? What are we here talking about? It's the motor race. We came to watch an automobile race of the most talented teams, the most talented drivers. And so all of the razzle-mazzle stuff, you know, it when it starts to demean or take away from the main show, then why have it?
Okay, Ken, I'm going to disagree with you before we go on to our awards, because when you go and watch a movie in the cinema, there isn't some British guy shuffling out and apologizing, "Hi, guys. Hope you're okay. Sorry to be here. Here's your movie now. Enjoy it." No, they have... and then a lion comes on the screen, Ken. A lion. Because you need an intro to be amazing.
I just thought I'd let you know. I just text Will Buxton. He just texted me back. He actually wrote the whole script.
I just said that.
Yeah, I know. You said he wrote
the intro. Oh, right. He wrote everything.
He wrote the whole script.
Dude, that is fantastic. And I think that works really well because the guy delivered it fantastically. That's what he does for a living. He's not a script writer. He is a deliverer of amazing voice work, and he did it. So boo to the naysayers, boo to the stuffed shirts. Well done, USGP, for delivering a spectacle. Let's move on to Thing of the Weekend. Let's start with Matt Trumpets. What was your thing of the weekend?
Well, oh my goodness, was this ever a tough choice? But I think I'm going to have to go with the actual racetrack itself. And I know someone in the panel dismissed it as a Tilkeydrome, but it's worth remembering that Tilkey didn't actually design the circuit originally. And show me another circuit that has two separate turn complexes where we saw as many passes as we saw today.
It's a great track.
It is one of the best tracks for overtaking and spectacle on the entire circuit. And I don't care what kind of a face Sparkles makes. I'm right. You're not.
It is the worst track.
What?
It is the worst track to have
joined. Get out.
You are ridiculous. No, hang on. Let's hear his ridiculous points. Come on.
Get out.
Okay. All right. Just be the S's at Suzuka or Maggots and Beckett's from Silverstone for the first sector. And then we'll have a stupid turn one where it goes up 1,000 meters. And then we'll do this stupid thing where he can't let go of turn 8 from Istanbul, can he?
It's okay. Really good, though.
So let's get this straight. Everyone loves Maggots and Beckett's and the S's from Suzuka. They're some of the best corners on the circuit.
And
okay, let's put that in. So that's fantastic. It shows the aerodynamics of the car. It shows the way the car's set up. It's a brilliant, brilliant piece of thing to test a car and a driver's ability, because it's incredibly technical and difficult to do. Turn 8 from Istanbul, one of the best corners ever devised, and we don't go to it anymore, so now it is on the circuit.
But it's not as good, is it? It's not as good as either of those.
Works brilliantly. I'll tell you why it works brilliantly for racing, because I was talking about this before. The reason it works so brilliantly for racing is because you have corners that lead from left to right and lead into other corners, which is what gives you the great racing.
Oh yeah, like that's such an original idea. I've never seen a track that goes left to right.
Okay, so let me get this straight now. The drivers love this track. The teams love this track. The fans love this track. We get some of the best racing we've seen all season. So clearly it's the worst track on the circuit. Is that really going to be your argument? Because okay. I don't know. I don't know if I put a lot of money on that. I'll be honest.
Okay.
This has been a highlight of the season. I just hate the track.
Okay. Let's call a halt to that. Great argument. Chris Stevens, what's your thing of the weekend? Wow.
I'm so glad Matt didn't say this, but it's Carlos Sainz Jr. How can it not be?
Yeah, absolutely a revelation. I'm really looking forward now to the rest of the season. I'm so pleased they got him in early and didn't wait till next season.
Christopher Fonseca says, can this thing of the weekend be the podcast?
chaotic, but amazing. We're so sleepy, it hurts. But yeah, Carlos Sainz, absolutely. this is the beginning, isn't it?
Oh, totally, totally. It's a revelation for him. We've got a proper benchmark up against him now for Hulkenberg as well. I think he's going to come into his own.
James Funnell, the middle sector, presumably of the podcast, isn't great, but the rest is amazing. Huh, just like this weekend's race. Okay, so Ken, what's your thing of the weekend?
It has to be, for me, Esteban Ocon, because while Carlos Sainz was good, look who manages tires the way that Sergio Perez has done in seasons past and scored the big points and had a brilliant, brilliant defense against Carlos Sainz, who was really on his game today. Great performance by our young man, Esteban Ocon.
Hard to disagree.
And it's worth mentioning he was sick while he did it.
Legend. Gene Z, what was your thing of the weekend?
So I'd originally written down after the first few laps of the race, Bottas and Ricciardo. But to be fair, we saw so much decent wheel-to-wheel racing. I think it's just the racing. The racing was fantastic this weekend. Actual wheel-to-wheel stuff, people going for it. However, I do have a caveat that goes for K-Mag, who actually apologised after qualifying in the pen.
Yeah.
Who'd have thought it? Yeah. The guy can actually admit he's wrong.
I think I've seen K-Mag do a few things like that where he's just gone like that. And I really am like one of these guys in politics as well. Why don't people just go, I got that wrong and now I'm trying to do the right thing. Instead, everyone batters them and says, no, you're doing a U-turn. So yeah, let's let guys put their hands up and say when they've done something wrong, and let's not see that as a sign of weakness. But more than that, Jeansy, the racing this season has been fantastic. Everyone was scared about these new regulations, and I'm not saying it's perfect. It's a step in the right direction.
Oh, definitely. I mean, the thing that was interesting for me anyway, was during that first stint, how close Lewis was able to hang with Seb.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Everyone's been saying all season long that Merck can't follow. Well, Lewis had it covered. Actually, Bottas followed for quite a while. Did Bottas follow anyone today? Yeah, Chris is nodding. So, Bottas did some following as well. So maybe this track lends to it, or maybe they've just worked on it at Mercedes.
So I'd like to give my thing of the weekend to Mercedes, and particularly James Allison on the podium collecting the Constructors' Trophy. Let's not lose sight of the fact that Mercedes have won a fourth Constructors' title in a row. And what a story for that guy as well. He's had a rough year. We were critical of him last season. People were asking if he had led teams in the right direction. But there he is. He's at the helm of Mercedes, and they've picked up another world championship. They have a great car. Now, the bad thing. We've been positive enough.
Oh no, you missed the apex.
Treeface, my son, would like to know who has missed the apex for you, Matt Trumpets?
Haas.
Haas.
No point. Home race. It just hurts.
Ken, are you equally hurt by Haas's inability to stamp their territory in the US of A? When they went to the trouble of getting an eagle to fly over the track, Haas could not even deliver.
Yeah, that was funny, that eagle thing. Because Haas has no budget and they have their own issues. No, I think who missed the apex was our friend Mr. Bottas. In that, I think I saw a brilliant drive by his teammate, and I was disappointed by Mr. Bottas today.
It's been getting worse and worse over the course of the season, particularly after the summer break. But it's really hard in F1 to know whether he is dropping the ball and making his teammate in a decent car look incredible, or whether he has a world-class teammate who is just doing impossible things in his car and making a good driver look ordinary.
Here's my thoughts on that in general, is that it's a little bit the team's fault as well, and that when you're in that situation, the team needs to work with the driver to understand what the driver really wants out of that car. What every driver has a different style, and they need to work with that driver to help him find that speed that he has and go forward. But at the end of the day, you know whose fault it is, Spanners, and you'll appreciate this.
Yeah,
it's got to be Rosberg, because Rosberg left the team with a very hard choice, and they ended up with Bottas because he was kind of the best guy available.
Absolutely.
And now we're here.
Even the Hanfossi have to admit now that Rosberg was a world-class driver who would be the number one in any of the top teams. In many ways, perhaps Rosberg was just incredibly unlucky to come up against a teammate who knew him inside and out and who is at the top of his game. But I don't think anyone was ever saying Rosberg was poor or Rosberg was terrible.
I did.
Yes, they were spanners. Trust me, they were, and they were wrong.
No, but my point was is that it's Rosberg's fault because Rosberg, he wins the world championship, and then he after the season says, "That's it, I'm done. Yeah. I quit F1." Right,
he ran away.
He left his team in a very difficult situation, and so they had to scramble to find a driver, and they had to steal him off of Williams, and he was like the best that they could find. And so it's Rosberg's fault that, in part, because Bottas, I mean, and I say this as a Bottas fan, I think he's got a lot of potential. I still do, but he really needs to perform better.
Good. In the chat room, Missed Apex award goes to the USA from Darren Johnson for not having the race a few hours earlier to be sociable to the Europeans. Oh, come on. We have it so good here. And I enjoy these late night races where I forget the time and I've just realized it's 12:30 and that we've overrun by some way. But that's what you get when I'm too tired to do good timekeeping. Christopher Fonseca says, emotions aside, Max Verstappen missed the apex as he was penalized by the FIA. And then, bless the internet, James Funnel comes up and says, the FIA missed the apex with penalties, both grid and time, for engine and that incident. Who have I not asked for a missed the apex? I believe Sparkles and Jeansy. Sparkles, who missed the apex for you?
Nico Hülkenberg's oil pressure.
Oh, I know. What a shame. Absolutely robbed us of the battle with Sainz. Jeansy.
So I was going to say Fiat being called Torpedo, because I don't think he wants to be called that. But it's actually, I've just been told by Will Buxton that it's actually on his helmet.
No, I think he likes it.
So I think he likes it. An insult that Sebastian Vettel threw at him, he likes. So I'm going for Bottas, but in a different way, in the sense of his defense against Kimi was woeful.
Yeah, he didn't even try.
He said, there you go. There's a big open door. Go for it. And I was fuming, because that's not how you defend when you're trying to stop another team, especially one that's right up your backside, getting close to you. Not impressive at all. Poor form.
So I will go to Matt, and Matt only, for the next award.
Daddy, I want a pony, and I want it now.
To me, it'll go to Lewis Hamilton, because, he just the odd radio call where he's just getting a little snarkier than required with his team. Who would you give it to, Matt?
Oh, I'm going to give it to Perez. Given half a chance, I give it to Perez. His multiple laps of whining about having more pace than his teammate, utterly belied by the actual pace of his actual teammate, along with his ability to defend better. Yeah, kind of put it in the bank for me.
Has to go to Jos Verstappen for his Twitter tirade after the race.
Oh, yeah.
Surely. I haven't read most of it, but I heard it all on Sky. That's how much they were talking about his tirade. It came up on Sky when Christian Horner was also moaning about it.
Well, you can understand in the heat of battle they were upset, but I don't follow Jos Verstappen on Twitter. Does he tweet much? Or was this a case of like middle-aged dude is like, where can I vent? Ah, this Twitter thing looks good. Because there was about four tweets in a row.
It's like typical karting dad who's getting all upset because their apparent superstar son isn't doing very, very well. I mean, okay, he does have a superstar son who isn't doing very, very well in this particular race, but oh well. Jos would have had a go at Kimi if Kimi did the same move and would have done the exact same tirade but in the opposite position.
Are you saying that human beings are situational and base their arguments on their current position in relation to that argument? I could quote the water wife paradox, but I won't. Instead, I'll ask Matt Trumpet, curator of our chat room, who has won this week's
comment of the week.
Well, now this would be the problem with letting the show go long. We have many, many potential winners. Sam Whatley for the FIA DDoS, which we didn't talk about, but there was an attack on the FIA site. equals more than 15 concurrent users out.
No. Right. Let's just quickly go on that. So there was a denial of service attack on the FIA website, which is basically when it is flooded to the point that no one can get in. If you want to be nefarious, you can deliberately target that. However, I am convinced that it was just Max Verstappen fans flooding it, being very unhappy, because those dudes, those Verstappen foci, are absolutely on it as far as fandom goes. Like, you think the ham foci has been a feature of Formula One? You ain't seen nothing yet. Those Max fans are fanatic, passionate, and boss.
They are indeed. We have P-Zest Gamer. I say the signs and it opened up my eye, along the lines of the famous song that we all know. We have Sandra Reynolds, Grid Boys, all about diversity.
I'd
getting in there a little
bit. Yeah, I'd have him.
And oh, look, Blackout 19 saying the Finnish pronunciation is boat ass. Trumpets is correct despite being American. So I don't know how that got in there. Clearly a mistake. Sam Wadley, again, Ferrari's fault when we played Whose Fault Is It Anyway? And Christopher Fonseca, is it possible for Ericsson to have a racing incident since we've never seen him actually racing?
That one?
You think so? All right.
What else you got?
Sam, again, if everyone got 5 seconds, we'd be into the 2018 season. Low stealth, if you're going to be a bad podium presenter, be drunk like Patrick Stewart.
Oh, yes, I saw that comment earlier, and Patrick Stewart was mint. Easily the best podium of the year.
And our emeritus winner, Blackout 19, jumps in again. Gentlemen, start your engines, followed by confused looks from the teams as they start their complex 5-minute startup procedure.
It's a shame that he's a legacy commenter. He's not eligible for this prize, unfortunately.
Low Stealth says, Sparkles is no fun. This is why we threw tea into the bay. And flatly, one more time, it's sport, therefore it's entertainment. If you don't like that, take it up with the Romans.
Oh, Matt, it's between the anyone who disses Sparkles is in with a chance, and also Ericsson. So between those two, the tea comment for me is nudging
tea comment. I go for tea comment too.
Low Stealth, congratulations. You are the winner of this week's Comment of the Week.
Comment of the Week.
Guys, make sure you subscribe to Missed Apex Podcast this week. That means on whatever you listen to your podcast on, be it iTunes or Dogcatcher or Pocket Cast on Android, make sure you subscribe, because you are not going to want to miss this week's podcast, this week's stream. Matt has vowed now to do a waffle cast, a trumpets time. I'm going to be speaking to Joe Sayward and the former CEO of a recent Formula One team. You are going to want to tune in, I promise you. Until next time, remember that wounds heal, chicks dig scars, and glory lasts forever. This is Missed Apex. Oh, guys, it's so late. It's a good job we don't have jobs or anything.
I'm working from home tomorrow.
Yeah, I think I might have a... I've got a bit of a cough coming on.
I'm working from home tomorrow. I'm going to go in late.
Listen to you, it's not even 1 o'clock. Ooh,
yeah, but you're nocturnal, Stevens, because A, you're 12, and B, you've just got like weird jobs in media. It's not a real job.
And you don't have kids.
I have a real job. I have a real job.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape.
And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.